There are two parts to this Mishnah. The first part lists three cases of Nashim that are excluded from Knas. The Elu She'en Lehem Knas. So this is the Sefer, the Reisha. The Reisha is the Mishnah Daf Chof Tes, which begins the Perek. This is the Sefer, that Mishnah, the second Mishnah in the Perek. And we have problems of Knas in the case of Giores, Shvuya, and Shivcha. The Mishnah also records Machlokes between Rav Yudin and Tanakhava regarding Shvuya. Then the second part of this Mishnah lists women are excluded from Knas not because of their status as a Ba'ula, but because, even though they're Basula, because of Kimleib Derabmi. And in the language of the Mishnah, it says, Elam Knas Mibnesha Mishaya Bin Nafsho. The Mishnah goes on to quote the source for Kimleib Derabmi, which we've discussed on many occasions, Im Lo Yason Anosh Yevish. Now there's a Yushalmi. The Yushalmi wants to know, why is it necessary, in the case of Baal Bito, which is the first on this list, to introduce Kimleib Derabmine? After all, he, the father, was Ma'anes, his own daughter, Rachmana Litzlan, right? This is such a terrible avera. And forget about the Chiyuv Misa for a moment. Let's just ignore for the moment the Chiyuv Misa. The knas is meant to be paid to the father because she's a nara and she doesn't have her own yad. He himself is the ma'anis. So obviously there's no knas because he would be the recipient of the knas. And Yushalmi comes up with the following answer. Ba'aleh ad shalo meis aviha umeis aviha. What happens in the following scenario? The Ma'anes implements his action during the lifetime of the father. The father's alive and well. Then the father dies. So Rabbi Yossi Aglili is of the opinion in this case, there is no knas. Why? Because Knas has to go to the father. And at the time of Hamad bin Din, the father's already gone. Rabbi Akiva, on the other hand, disagrees. He says that she substitutes for her father as far as rights to collect the Knas. So even if her father's dead, then Rabbi Akiva's opinion is she now collects the Knas, because Rabbi Akiva understands that in a case of onus u'mefateh, the Nara herself really has rights to the Knas. Her rights become secondary to those of the father because she's still in the Rishus of the father. If the father's Rishus is removed, is neutralized, then she will step forward and collect the Knas herself. So for example, Rabbi Kiva holds that Nis'arsa and Nis'garsha Knasa Liatzma, that once she had Erisim, she leaves the Rishus of her father.
We saw that this morning.
I'm sorry? Yeah, we saw it this morning. And she collects the Knas herself. Says the Yushalmi, let's talk about the following case. Ba'al Bito, and then Nis'arsov and Nis'garsh, which according to Rabbi Kiva at least means that she leaves the Rishus of her father. Now let's ignore Kimleib Derabmine for a moment, and we're going to come to the conclusion that according to Rabbi Kiva, according to the Shita of Rabbi Kiva, in this case the father would have to pay the Knas to her. He's out of the picture because she was the Saras of Nisgarsha, and she has rights to collect her own Knas. And this will justify our Mishnah. Why is that the Mishnah is compelled to introduce Kimleib Derabmine? Because otherwise she has rights to her own Knas. Aval the Rabbi Yossi Aglili, this really is how it's Kash Knossali Atzma. Lomatzina Lukumastisan Elk Shemesa Av Kodem Amonabidin. So let's go through two scenarios. One scenario would be the father was Ma'anes, his own daughter, and then he died. In such a case, if his death took place before the Amar Bidin, then she, the Bas, will replace the father, and she has rights to the Knas. Now, in a case where Mesa Av, how can we be Machayev the Knas? So the answer is that the brothers will have to pay the Knas to their own sister. Why is that? Because they inherit the father's chov. In other words, this is a problem because the father died before Amar Bidin, but let's ignore that problem for one moment, and let's assume that there's a shibud on the nechasim of the father to pay this knas. When the father dies, the yarshim, who are the achim, now inherit a karka that's mishubedes to pay this knas. She herself collects the knas because her father's gone, and she was the tovas at the time of Hamar Ben Din. She now is tovea her brothers, who inherit a chov of their father, which is a shibud in the nechasim, and she now can force the brothers to pay. She can collect the knas. That's one possible scenario. The other possible scenario would be nisarsa and nisgarsha. But let's just think how that would work out. If not for, just one second. Let's go back. I'm trying to. According to Rabbi Akiva, is Knos Aliatzma. According to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, Nisarsim is Garsha. Nisarsim is Garsha. Tilu Ukvimas Thesik Shed Bito Nisarsa Venisgarsha. Not sure what he means here when he says, Rabbi Yossi Aglili, Nisarsa Venisgarsha Knos Aliatzma. I don't know what he means by Knos Aliatzma. Is this either I'm mistaken or he's mistaken here? Rabbi Yossi Aglili holds that there is no Knas. I have to borrow Gemara because I don't have a Gemara Ksubis here. Or maybe I do have a Gemara Ksubis here. One second. Yeah, I do have a Gemara Ksubis. Sorry. Let's take a look at Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Okay, this is on Daf Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph. We're on Lamed Vav Amud Beis. Well, let's fast forward for a moment to Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph. No. Lamed Ches Amud Aleph. My mistake. Okay. I'm sorry, I'm a little bit disoriented. Here's the Mishnah. Right, it says Nara Shenis Arsa Nisgash Yossi Ein Lo Knas. So I'm not sure what he means here. Knas Oli Atzma. Again, so if you don't mind, I'm going to cross out two words here. Just and maybe I'm making a mistake somehow, but I don't know what my mistake is. But the Rabbi Yossi Aglili Sfilei Nis Arsa Nisgash Knas Oli Atzma. That you should erase those two words. Knas Oli Atzma. It's Ein Lo Knas. I'm not sure if this may have been just a printing error. So again, just to summarize what we get from this Yerushalmi, is that there are two ways of interpreting our Mishnah of Baal Bito in such a way that there would be Knas if not for Kim Lev Deramine. One would be Nisarsim Nisgarsha, but that would only work according to Rabbi Akiva, who holds Yeshla Knasu Knas Aliatzma. Rabbi Yossi Aglili would be forced to interpret it, our Mishnah, with a different scenario, which would be Mesa Av Kodem Hamad Abedin. So that's pretty much a summary of this Yerushalmi. Now again, there's a problem with this Yerushalmi, that we're not going to address now, and that is if the father died before Amar B'din, then l'chora there is no knas over here. And to say now that the Yarshim, meaning the brothers, should inherit a karka mishubedes from the father doesn't make any sense if the father died before Amar B'din. So that's a technical issue that we have to address in this Yerushalm. Let's talk a little bit about the Rashba, who's quoted here in the Shita Mekubetzes. Ikshar Rashba, Eich Efshar Shali Achar Shemesa Av Yia Loknas Me'avia, which means through the Yarshim, she collects the knas that her father has to pay.
Since he's the one who would receive it,
you can't say that he's chayv to pay himself. So the Maisa Bia would not generate any sort of knas, because the father himself has the rights to this knas.
We wouldn't automatically say that it goes to the Yorshim, because for a technical reason he's unable to receive it.
Well, again, we're saying a lot more than just that he can't receive the knas. We're saying that, you know, if there's anyone who has rights to this knas, it's always the father of the Nara. So if that be the case, then you can't say that the Yarshim inherit some sort of a chov to pay up a knas of their father when the father himself was zoch in that knas. You know, you're involved in sort of like circular reasoning. If you want to say, well, she's going to have rights to sue her brothers as Yarshim for the knas, then you're implying that the father owes a knas. Well, the father at the time of the bia certainly doesn't owe a knas, because he has rights to that knas. You can't say that I have a schus in knas and then say I have a chov to pay a knas. Those are mutually exclusive. So the Rashba is bothered by this situation where the father dies, which is again one scenario in the Ukimta, one possible Ukimta of the Yerushalmi. If the father dies, why would the Yarshim, the brothers in this case, inherit some sort of a chov to pay this knas when the father himself is the bailim, he's the zocher, he's the one who has rights to this knas? You can't turn around and say, well, rights to the knas generate shibudim and chovos. Vare zu kimefuta yisoma kevin to be daita ovidle lesle vachinami maishna. I'm not exactly sure why the Rashba feels compelled to compare it to mefuta yisoma. But what we mean is that in the case where the father dies, she collects the knas. But in the case of Pitu, she cannot collect the knas because she was mochelis on the knas. Mm-hmm. And here too, in a certain sense, you can't say that the father is chayav in the knas, because he's certainly mochel to himself on the knas. So there's no moment in time in which a chov to pay this knas emerges, such that that chov could be transferred over to the Yarshim. Now let's just for a moment fast forward to the next paragraph. He says, "Yesh levayer dvarov lefi mashach hakarnu li'el bi'ikar schus ha'av b'knas di'onis u'mefate ma'av hu abaylim al etzim ha'tviya u'schus ha'tviya kol zman sh'knas shayach l'urak shel ha'av." Or number two, "Di'yesh l'chol echemem din tviya." So it means the father is really being tovea on behalf of his daughter. V'hashta b'kushyoso, when the Rashba raises this question, Haven kitzad arishon, he understood that the zchus tviya belongs to the father. He has exclusive, total control rights to the tviya saknas. So if he dies, how could she collect knas when the knas, you know, is his? Hare at, again, I think there's Et zechut hatfiyah he mekabelus. Okay, it's a little bit strange, the syntax here. So the zechus hatfiyah of the father he mekabelus. In other words, any rights that she has to collect the knas after her father dies are only because she's stepping into the shoes of her father. Well, her father himself would not have been tover this knas because he's the one who would have to pay the knas, so he certainly doesn't want to pay himself. Is avia machal. So whatever chiv knas could have emerged as a result of this beer, the father is certainly mochel, and her rights are only to pick up her father's rights, but in this case her father has no rights to the knas because he's mochel the knas. So that's the Rashba in his Hava Mina. V'tireitz, and what was the Rashba's answer? V'yeshlomar kitzad asheni. That the bas herself, the isha herself, has her own independent schus tviyah. Why is it that she collects the knas after he dies? Not because she's stepping into the shoes of her father, because she has her own independent rights to the knas. Again, if the father's alive, his rights to the knas trump her rights. But nevertheless, she has her own independent rights. They're sort of, standing in the shadows and waiting to come out and reach fruition. And that's going to happen when the father dies. Okay. Now, let's fast forward for a moment here to Tuf Lamed Hey. You have that, right? In the photocopying? So to appreciate what goes on in Tuf Lamed Hey, we're going to fast forward to page to Daf Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph, and we're going to have here a sugya that analyzes the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim in the Reish of the Mishnah Lamed Vav and Beis regarding Shvuya. According to the Tanakhama, a shvuya is becheskas ba'ula, and therefore she doesn't collect knas. Rabbi Yehuda insists, fakir, that a shvuya is becheskas besula, and therefore she collects the knas. In the language of Rabbi Yehuda, shvuya sheniftes harei hi b'kedusha sa. Kedusha sa means she still retains her status as a becheskas besula. So if you'll take a look here on page Tuf Lamed Hey, he quotes the Braisa. The Braisa says in the name of Rabbi Yehuda Ksuba Sama Sayim that in the case of a shvuya, she still has the status of a besula, according to Rabbi Yehuda, v'kedusha sa, and therefore she collects a ksuba of a besula. Hikshu Arishonim, once again quoting the Shittim Kubetzis, Amaylo Poli Rabbi Yehuda Masnisen Deli El, Daf Yud Aleph Amin Beis, the Shvuya Shenish Beis, V'hi Yaseira Mibash Shal Shonim, Ksuba Samana. The Mishnah doesn't record a dissenting view of Rabbi Yehuda and establishes Pe'echad as a Stav Mishnah, that Shvuya Shenish Beis, she only collects a ksuba of a besula, of a ba'ula. Furthermore, the Rishonim are bothered. Mida ka'amar Rabbi Yehuda Rebik Dusha Sa, Mashba Shagam Lekoim Muteris Linase. If the Shvuya would have been raped by one of the Goyim who took her cat, one of the captors, then she would be psula Goya Ba'abas Yisrael Sa Zona, she's psula Lekoim. Va'amailo Polig Rabbi Yehuda Maslisin Deliel Chav Bezam and Aleph. And in that Mishnah, a shvuya is asura l'kohen. So basically, the thrust of these questions of the Rishonim is that we have certain Mishnayos that indicate that a shvuya is considered becheskas be'ula. We don't find the Mishnah recording the dissenting view of Rabbi Yehuda. Ulachara kol zehu al libid Rav Yochanan, aval Rava diyoyv taima de dafka beknas poli Rav Yehuda, mishum shelo yeichote niskar, mod Rav Yehuda de shvui asur lekoim. So Rava says that the reason why Rav Yehuda disagrees with the Tanakam in the case of Shvuya and insists that she will collect the knas is not because she has a cheskas besula. We really don't know one way or the other whether or not she had this, she may have had this relationship while she was in captive, but because of the doubt, we're going to apply the principle of lo yehechote niskar, and we're going to force the ma'anes to pay the knas, even though the Torah stipulates that she has to be a nara basula. This girl is in a questionable status, but nevertheless, we don't want him to get off easy and be a chote niskar, and therefore we're going to impose upon him a chiyuv to pay the knas. So it's a brand new category of a chiyuv knas that's going to apply to a woman whose status as a basula is very questionable. Hence, Rabbi Yehuda would never disagree about the status of this shvuya regarding a kohen. Why? Because since she has a questionable status, she may in fact have had be'ila. As a result, goya bal bas yisrael sazona, she's psula lekohen. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda would agree that she's psula lekohen. What would Rabbi Yehuda say about ksuba? Well, the truth is that she should receive the ksuba of a ba'ula. Why? Because we have a principle called Habotzi Mechavel of Haraya. And since her status is questionable, she may in fact be a ba'ula, she cannot possibly be tovas, a ksuvas besula. Why is it then that in the case of ksuba, the Mishnah says, kevan shenishbeis ksuba samana? Well, what would Rabbi Yehuda say about that? There's no application of the principle of Shaloye Chote Niskar, and therefore her status would have to be that of a Ba'ula. So I'm not sure exactly what he means. Again, you know, I'm finding a lot of difficulty in the printed words here. He says, Abel Miksuba Kasha Gam L'Rava. I don't know what he means by that. There's no Svar of Shaloye Chote Niskar in the case of Ksuba. There's no Chote over here. Man is marrying a woman, so what is a chote? Okay. Now, as I said, I'm in the mood today for short pieces. Here's another piece. Let's go back to the Gemara here on Daf Lamed Zayin. Just one second. If you could help me find it for a moment. HaPodeh Es Hashvuyah. The question is, if a Kohen himself wants to marry a Shvuya, what would Rabbi Yehuda say about that? Just one second. It's either here or here, one of two places. Yeah, here it is. Lamed Vav, Amud Beis. Yeah.
But 9 lines up from the bottom.
9 lines up from the bottom. Excellent. So the Gemara has to find Vesov Rav Yehuda v'kedushasa kaima, is Rav Yehuda consistent in his view that a shvuya is still v'cheskas besula v'asanya hapodes ha-shvuya yisa'ena mei bo lo yisa'ena Rav Yehuda ome beikach u'beikach lo yisa'ena. So before we get to the Tanakhama, let's just fast forward to Rabbi Yehuda, so we know where we're going. The end of the forest here. Rabbi Yehuda says that a kohen is not allowed to marry a shvuya. Now wait a second. Why would Rabbi Yehuda object to a kohen marrying a shvuya if Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah says that a shvuya collects knas, meaning b'kedushas kaima? Again, this is before Rabbi's introduction of shaloye chote niskar. We're assuming Rabbi Yochanan's position. And Rabbi Yochanan, in fact, had identified Rabbi Yehuda with Rabbi Dosa earlier on this Amud, who says that a Shvuya is Ochelis Betruma. And we don't call her a Zona. We don't assume she's Psula min ha-kuhuna. So the Rabbi Yochanan took Rabbi Yehuda kipshuto, you know, for his word. He took him at his word, and Rabbi Yehuda says, b'kdushasa, she's still considered a basula. It means we don't assume that she was a ba'ula. Again, according to Rabbi Yochanan, we're going to have problems why the various Mishnais didn't mention Rabbi Yehuda's name as a dissenting opinion. But let's focus now on the following issue. How could Rabbi Yehuda, who says b'kdushasa, prohibit this woman, this shvuya, to a kohen when we assume that she's b'kdushasa, that she didn't have bia, she still has a cheskas besula? That's the Gemara's kasha. Now, before we answer this kasha, let's go back to the Tanakhama. The Tanakhama says that the Kohen may or may not be able to be allowed to marry this Shvuya. If he's poda the Shvuya, which means that the Kohen takes out his own money to redeem the Shvuya, then he's allowed to marry her. But if Mayin Ba, if he testifies that he has personal knowledge that she remained B'Kedushasa during the time of Hashemi, maybe he was also captured, I don't know, is Lo Yisena, then he's not allowed to marry her. So the Gemara says, you're asking Akasha from a Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda, let me try to understand the Brisa itself. Hagufa Kasha. How could the Brisa say, Amrit Podes Hashvi Yisena, that if the Kohen writes the check to redeem this woman from Shevi, he's allowed to marry her, but made Baal Lo Yisaena, and then you're telling me that if he testifies that he has personal knowledge that she remained a Besula, he's not allowed to marry her. Why not? Hello, Kasha, that's not a problem. Hachikomer, Hapodes Hashvuya Umeid Baal Yisaena. If he first puts his money with his mouth is, he's willing to shell out an enormous sum of money in order to redeem her from captivity, then when he testifies that he knows personally that she was Tahora, we believe him, because otherwise, if he was lying, he's going to take a tremendous loss. He is shelling out an amazing sum of money in order to be potent. But Meid Ba Kiddi, Kiddi means without paying any money, Lo Yisaena, we're afraid that maybe he wants to marry this girl, and he's so involved in this love relationship that he testifies falsely that he knows that she didn't have any sort of an intimacy with one of her captors. Mikolakom Kashel Rabbi Yehuda. So Amar Papa Eimer Rabbi Yehuda Omer Benkach U Benkach Yisaena. Rabbi Papa changes the girsa in this brisa, and he's saying that Rabbi Yehuda Omer Benkach U Benkach Yisaena, not Lo Yisaena, but Yisaena, he can marry her because she's Becheskas Kedushasa, Becheskas Psua.
So the other thing he could be made on, not on her Kedusha, but on the fact that she was, that he knows she was not violated.
Correct.
He doesn't say that. He just jumps to the fact that B'kdushata kaima.
No, B'kdushata is another way of saying that she wasn't violated, right? In other words,
so
she
what
entered.
Else could, what is, when it says Kadi, what isn't he?
He's not shelling out any money. Let the community, you know, organize a magbit, you know, they'll have a collection of money in order to pay the money. If he proves that he's not lying and he has no vested interest here because he shells out an amazing amount of money, it means he's absolutely telling the truth that he knows that she is B'kdushasa, she was not violated.
Otherwise he has...
And that's what I call put your money where your mouth is, meaning, you know, it's very, you know, it's cheap, words are cheap, you know, to say, oh, I know that she didn't have violated, anybody can say that. But if he proves it, because his interest in marrying us is such that he's going to pay money, that proves that he's not telling a lie, but that he's really telling the truth. Tarech Im. So this you'll see on page Taf Lamed He. Mimonafshach. Ichash dinon le sheyasa vera benesuin. You're telling me that until he shells out the money, we think he's lying. He is violating an iser of zona here. He's a kohen marrying this woman. Im kein gamim no se mos nechush lekach. He has such a desire, a burning passion to marry this girl, that he's going to violate every single moment of his life, an iser lav of a zona, then he's probably so passionately involved with this woman that he'll shell out all the money in the world in order to get her free so he can marry her.
And how can we...
The Imlochash Nidalei, if you're going to tell me we rely on his sense of truth, is lava lo yisa ena, af kishemeid bastam lo otzielamos. Even if he didn't shell out any money, you're telling me that he would not lie in this case. And lo chashdinalei, we're not choshedim that the man is going to marry a woman who's a zona, and he's a kohen. So why do you need that he shells out the money? Now, the very fact that you add this condition that he has to shell out the money for her ransom indicates that you don't trust him. Well, if you don't trust him, I'm not sure that shelling out the money is going to change anything, because the man is willing to live in sin with this woman who's psulalo. Such a person would shell out money for his passion if he's so, you know, his yetzer has the best of him. The yesh levayer devadai. He's quoting apparently a Taz over here. Devadai chashdinale shemeid afal pisha eni yodeh shi tor v'nei shi yitzo tokfo. He's so passionately involved in marrying this, interested in marrying this woman, that he'll falsify his testimony. But achiluku kach, what's the significance of his paying the money for her ransom? The hecha sheinu no seid mos and mafsid klum, but zeh shemeid oleh shetori. There's no loss. It's pure gain. Diim toda shenitma'a. If she'll come forward with a confession that she was violated, is there lo yisaena? He won't marry her. Who sover shelo toda v'yisaena? But he thinks that she's not going to confess to this crime, and therefore he'll be allowed to marry her. Oh, so how can we trust him? Aval hecha sheno seid mos im lo haya yodea bibiru shi tora lo haya poda osa. Shechoshesh haya shematoda v'achkach shenitma achkach shen achkach. Oh, I'm sorry, achkach shenitma v'yafsid ma osa. I'm not sure if the Taz is adding any major breakthrough. He's basically saying, let's weigh the benefits to the deficits. So if he doesn't pay any money, then he's really in a win-win situation. He's not jeopardizing any sort of loss. Why? Because what's going to be the problem here? It's Yitzo Tokfo. He has no idea whether she's Torah or not. He's going to lie in bed and say, I know that she's Torah. And what's going to happen in the worst case scenario? She's going to come forward and admit and confess that she had this beer relationship, she was victimized. Then, guess what? He won't marry her. So what did he lose? He has everything to gain and nothing to lose. Because you're telling him now that he's not allowed to marry this woman. So he's saying to you, I know that she's Tahor. Great, now I can marry her. Pure benefit. She may show him up, so to speak, you know, laugh in his face, and she'll say, well, I was violated. Toda shenitma. He says, in that case, he won't marry her. So he's back to where he was, square one. He didn't lose anything.
But he's the one giving the testimony that she's Tahor.
Right.
Then... how can he then turn around and marry her? He's like no gavadavar.
The answer is he can't marry her. We believe Yitzo Tokfo, and he's fabricating the whole story. And why is he doing so? Because he has nothing to lose. He has everything to gain. What is he thinking? He's thinking, if they trust me and they allow me to marry her, great. I'll be the happiest man on the planet because Yitzo Tokfo. If, on the other hand,
yeah,
you know, she'll come forward and say nitma, so he won't marry her. So where is he lost in comparison to saying nothing? He's lost nothing. He's back at square one.
And he didn't pay anything either.
Correct. Oh, here's where the chiluk comes, says the Taz. But if he shells out money, mm-hmm, and he's fabricating the truth, he doesn't really know whether she's Torah or not, then maybe she'll come forward and admit and confess the crime that she was Nitma. He's going to lose all his money. Meaning, his goal was through this money to free her and marry her. But if he can't marry her, so what did he accomplish?
So it's like a chazaka that he wouldn't have given this money if it were not true.
Exactly. Now we get to the Nod of Yehuda. What happens in a case where he testifies without shelling out the ransom money and then he goes and marries her? Do we force him to divorce his wife? This is the suffix of the Nod of Yehuda. And he quotes a Mishnah back on Daf Chav Zayin Amud Beis. The Rabbi Zechariah Ben HaKatzav Heid Al Ishto Shalom Nitma'a V'lo Kiblu Es Eduso Mishum De'en Ode Me'ed Al Atzmo U'Beshit Mekbetz Shom Piresh Da'atam Mishum She'ishto Kigufo.
Can't get testimony on her.
Right. V'lo Litam Zari V'lava Cheshin Shema Ein Ode Nosan Bo V'kolshken Hasam de ishtohi umukach de mitam zelo asrina b'dievet v'hasam de isha haisa ein l'chad dievet gadol mizeh. So now the Yehuda wants to quote this Mishnah as a proof that although l'chadchila we don't trust him and he can't marry her, but if he's already married to her, then we don't upset, we don't undermine the relationship and force him to divorce his wife, because the Mishnah there addresses a case in which a husband was made al ishto, they didn't accept his testimony, he's obviously has vested interests, and the Shita Mekubetzes says that the reason why he's not believed is because of ishto kigufa. So the Yehuda asks the following question. It's a kash really on the Shita Mekubetzes. Why does the Shita Mekubetzes feel compelled to explain the Mishnah of Ein Adam Meid, that we cannot rely on his own testimony regarding his own wife? Says the Shita Mekubetzes, why don't we trust him? And its answer is because of Ishto Kegufo. Now, Ishto Kegufo is what we call a psul aguf. It's a technical psul in Edus, that you can't testify about yourself, and now we're expanding that to include your wife, because she's like yourself. She's like part of your guf. Why do we need this technical psul when we have no reason to believe him? He's lacking fundamental credibility here, because as we saw in our sugya Sheva Nasan Einov Ba. And the answer is that although l'chadchilu we don't rely on his avos because of Shema Yitzro Tokfo or Nasan Einov Ba, he's not possible as an aid. He can testify. And the nafka mina is going to be, if b'dieved he got married, whether we should undermine the marriage because Shema Nasan Einov Ba. And the answer is that b'dieved, if he's already married, we're not going to apply the principle that we passel him for edus. But the exception to the rule is a husband who's made on his wife, and we apply the yardstick, the principle of ishto kegufo, which means that he's technically not an aid. So we have no edus at all regarding this woman. But don't apply the principle of shema nasan einam baba, because now we're in a b'dieved situation. He's already married her. Hence, the Yehuda comes to the conclusion, which he's about to rescind, that the Shema Nasan Einav Bavasu is only l'chadchila, but in the event we're going to fall back on his edus in event that he already married. Vidacha. Now the Nod Yehuda is going to reject this proof. In truth, when there's a chashash of Shem Anos and Enubah, his Eidus is meaningless, and therefore Mkonas Motzi, we're gonna beat him up until he divorces his wife. Ella, the imitam Shema Enov Nosan Bo, Hoysa Eiduso Mo Elis. Le'inyon shetuchal li'nase le'koin acher.
We believe him on her, but not for his sake.
So as far as his own benefits are concerned, we're not going to believe him. And if you're going to tell me, just one second, so the reason we don't believe Mishem Anosan Eino Bo, I should tell him, just one second. I'm not sure why he's rejecting his original position. The original position of the Yehuda was to make a distinction between Ishto Kegufo and the Chashash of Shem Anosan Eino Bo. In the case of Ishto Kegufo, he's not an aid at all. In the case of Shem Anosan Eino Bo, his aid is acceptable, but we're afraid that maybe he's lying. So because of that fear that maybe he's lying, we're going to say, l'chatchila, we're not going to rely on his aidus. So what forces the Nod Yehuda to backtrack? It seems to me that he's got a very solid argument here. Not sure here what's going on. And the Shvi is married or she's not married? I thought she's not married. Mitam Shemanosan Enov Ba, Hoysa Eduso Mo Elis, the Inshatukal. Let me read this one more time. If I don't get it, we'll just go on. The MSH Shalom the Afram Kanas Motz. Elavadai. Then his Eidus should be meaningful as far as someone else is concerned, because he's not Nogea to that other Kohen who wants to marry him. He's not Nogea of Eidus. Again, I would wonder how this works, because is this some sort of palginin dibura halach? I don't know what underlies the Nod of Yehuda's thinking here. But in any event, he's not believed vis-a-vis himself, because he's no gebedus shemanosan edaba, but he is believed vis-a-vis someone else, because the chash of shemanosan edaba is not going to lead him to any joyful benefits, because somebody else is going to marry her, in this case a Kohen. Masha Enkin, he says, Mitam Ishto Kigufo, which is the case in the Mishnah on Daf Chav Zayin, there Eine Dusum Elis Kal Fiul Gaviach. Okay, that's a brilliant chap. Ve'afiul Yachar Moso Asura Linase LeKohen. Well, that's interesting. Right? There was a problem of Ishto Kegufo while he was alive and married to her. And we can't accept his testimony. Now that he's dead, maybe that Eidus that he gave could be valid, so that now she can marry a Kohen, because the Ishto Kegufo no longer applied. But the answer is, since it was Ishto Kegufo, there was no Eidus at all. And if there's no Eidus at all, then even after his death, and you circumvent or you neutralize the Ishto Kegufo element, it's irrelevant, because the Eidus was never an Eidus. L'chein nokta mishnah tam zedein on the maid al atzma. So the whole proof of the Nod of Yehuda was, why did the Shittim Gubetzah say that the Mishnah is based on the fact that Ishto Kegufo? Why didn't the Mishnah simply quote Shemane Nosan Einoba, the chash of Nogea Be'edus that he's Meshaker, and the Nod of Yehuda wants to prove from that then it means that Shevanasan Einibom is only Elechatchila Dika Chashash. But the Eved, if he married her, the marriage would be valid. No. You know why the Mishnah said Ishto Kagufa as opposed to Nasan Einibom? Even if Nasan Einibom means that he would have to divorce her if he married her, that's because Negia Be'edus is only relevant when he'll benefit, or to the extent to which he'll benefit from the Eidus. But as far as objective Eidus that might be relevant for someone else, and he will not benefit, we can accept his Eidus. Masha'en came the Mishnah that's built on a different principle, namely, Ishto Kegufo, means that Eidus is completely undermined, and it will never have any impact whatsoever under any circumstances, even after he dies and is no longer Ishto Kegufo. It doesn't matter, because Ishto Kegufo apostles the Eidus from the get-go. Inherent in the Eidus is the psul of Ishto Kegufo. That's not like the psul of Shemanos and Enov Ba, which although it completely disqualifies his Eidus vis-a-vis himself, because he's an Ogebi Eidus here as far as himself is concerned, and if he married her, he would force her to divorce his wife. But to the extent in which he's not an Ogebi Eidus, that means vis-a-vis Acherim, we can accept his Eidus. And in a case of Shemanos and Enov Ba, his Eidus is going to be acceptable. Therefore, the Mishnah wants to tell you, name, his Eidus will not be acceptable. Klal, ki hu zeh, it's completely necro legamri. Why? Because of Ishto Kegufo.
Doesn't everyone hold Ishto Kegufo?
Everybody holds Ishto Kegufo, but the question is, why did the Mishnah, the way the Shita says it, the Mishnah excludes his Eidus and disqualifies it because of Ishto Kegufo? Why not just say Shevanos and Einabav? And the answer is that Shevanos and Einabav is a secondary kind of psul. It's a psul that's a mixas psul, meaning it's only relative to the extent to which he's gaining by his Eidus. Then he's an Ogedev Eidus. But his Eidus per se is not possible. It could be valid vis-a-vis another Kohen who's towards which there's no Negiah Be'edus. Therefore, the Mishnah says the Shita Mekubetz is based on a different kind of psul of Ishto Kegufo, which means that he's not an Eid at all. And if his Eidus is not acceptable, it's not valid from the get-go, then even vis-a-vis Acherim, or in this case, even after his death, there would be no heter to a Kohen, because his Eidus is completely meaningless. And again, now, we're really, this is a very lumpish piece in the Note of Yehuda, because he's differentiated between two kinds of psuli Eidus. One kind of psuli Eidus is not mafkir the Eidus. It's only mafkir, it only passes the relevance of the Eidus to X, Y, or Z, but not the Eidus per se, whereas that's called a kashash sheker. So kashash sheker, we can limit the Eidus and say, well, vis-a-vis this, relative to this, he's kosher b'sheker, and we can't rely on his Eidus. But his Eidus remains kosher vis-a-vis something else. Masha Enkin, if you have a psul like Ishto Kegufo, then what you say is that he's testifying about himself. And a person cannot testify about himself. I always say about the Note of Yehuda that over the last three centuries, he was probably the greatest genius in Ashkenazic Jewry. And you see his beautiful grasp and his mastery over lovedness here in this particular paragraph. Now, there's somebody else that he's quoting here. I'm trying to figure out who he's quoting here by looking in the footnotes. You know what? I think he's quoting the Note of Yehuda, because the Beit Shmuel was about a century before the Note of Yehuda, if I'm not mistaken. Lefi zeh heir al mashen istapek ha Beit Shmuel, which you'll see here is Ebenezer Simon Zion, Bishvuyo shenisseis li Yisrael, v'nimtseis besula. Wow, this is a whole scenario. A man who's a Yisrael marries a Besula. I'm sorry, a Shvuya, and he finds out that in Enochinam she's a Besula. He discovers Dan. Now he dies, and a Kohen wants to marry her.
How did she remain a Besula if they were married?
Again, a Kohen is allowed to marry an Almana. She's now an Almana.
But it says,
who cares if she's a Besula?
Shvuya Shenisek LeYisrael.
Right.
The Nisek Betula. How's that possible? If she was Nisek, then she's not a Betula anymore.
No, and Shevi, she was not raped during Shevi. And how do I know this? Because after I consummated the marriage, I saw Dam on the sheets. That proves that she was not violated during the Shevi by a guy. Now, when he dies, she becomes an Almana, and she's allowed to marry a Kohen.
Oh.
That's one side of the Beis.
She was not violated in Shevi.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. The Chayshinan, mind-boggling, Shema Heraba HaShevi. Being to make a woman into a Zona, all the guy has to do is Hara, in which he doesn't remove the Besulin. So the fact that the Yisrael married her found Dam on the thing doesn't tell me Ki Uzeh, because she's already a Zona by virtue of the Ha'ara of the guy during the Shevi.
That's considered Tchilas Bia.
I mean Tchilas Bia, yeah. Ha'ara is synonymous with Tchilas Bia. Once again, I tip my hat to the Beis Shmuel for coming up with this whole scenario with this suffix. Says the Nodav Yehud, L'fimash nisbar, vaday shasura linasi l'koin, deman meidol ha-shebsula ha-isa baila, right? Oh. He's not learning that there's dam on the sheets, which is the way I thought. He's simply saying that all we have is the word of the Yisrael. And we don't trust the Yisrael because Ishto Kigufo. Now, just one second. This is Ishto Kigufo. Right, Ishto Kigufo. Just one second. What was the case in the Mishnah Chav Zayin? Just one second, where is that? Rabbi Zachari ben Akatzav Hedal Isha Shlo Nitma'a. I'm a little confused. What do you mean Shlo Nitma'a? Shlo Nitma'a with what? With the Yisrael? I'm missing a piece of the puzzle here. Are we talking about a Shvuya? Can somebody lend me a Gemara Ksubis? Maybe there's one here in the room. I just don't have a Gemara Ksubis here.
There's one.
You have one?
Here.
Okay, wait. Maybe I have one here. Oh, I have one here, so I don't have to take yours. Let's open up for just a minute to Chav Zayin Amid Beis. Just want to see if I'm missing one piece of the puzzle here. Zosi Yoda Mitachas Yodi. Shosh and Nichnasu of the Kofom and Shiyotsu. From Lo Ino the Maid Al Atzmo. Just trying to figure out, is he a Kohen? Because if he's not a Kohen, I don't understand what the issue is here. Let's see, the Gemara says, Tana v'yachal pichein yiched lo beis chatzero. V'yachal pichein, ooh, look at Rashi, sha'asru olav lefi shekoen haya.
Yeah, okay.
Lefi shekoen haya. So what's the note of view they're talking about here? I don't get it. In the Beis Shmuel's case, he's not a Kohen. So why is he... What's going on over here? Niseis LeYisrael. So what? There's a chashash. What is he? This is Ishtoki Gufo. What does that mean, Ishto Kigufo? Ishto Kigufo is such that now she can marry a Kohen if he dies? That's what we're talking about? One second. This topic of Beishmu, let's just read it again. Beshvuyash in Nises Li Yisrael. Vinimtes Bisula. Well, the problem is that we need Edus. And he's testifying about his own wife. And that's called Ishto Kigufo. So Mimela, she can't marry a Kohen. How could the Beis Shmuel have a suffix that maybe she's allowed to marry a Kohen when his testimony is possible? And that's called Ishto Kigufo. But I don't understand. Ishto Kigufo means that if you marry a woman and you're testifying about something that happened before in her life before you married her, so your edus is possible because of Ishto Kigufo? Is that necessarily so? He's testifying about her during her Shevi. That's before he married her. So that's called Ishto Kigufo? Well, no, Shemein Anosinvo doesn't apply here at all, because what difference does it make whether she's a Bu'ula or not? We're talking about a Yisrael. Do you follow? He has no vested interest here in testifying that she was not victimized. He has no Negiyah whatsoever. So there's no Shemein Anosinvo. That Shemein Anosinvo only applies to a Kohen who wants to marry her, but he's a Yisrael. Mm-hmm. So the only possible psul you can apply is Ishto Kigufo. So the Nodbi Yudah says if you apply Ishto Kigufo, then how could the Beis Shmuel have a Havamina that a Kohen could marry her based on the testimony of a husband on his own wife? Because Ishto Kigufo apostles the Anus. I'm just wondering whether or not there's Ishto Kigufo over here, because he's testifying about what happened to her before he even married her. So now he's married to him, we're going to apply Ishto Kigufo? Let me ask you the following question. Let's say your wife's name is Leah. I'm just going to throw out a name, right? So before you married Leah, she borrowed $1,000 and she paid it back. And now she needs testimony that she paid it back. Now you married her. Are you allowed to testify on Leah that she paid back a chov before you married her? Or are we going to say that now it's already Ishto Kigufo at the time of the Avis? What would you say about that? Do you hear my question?
He has a vested interest that she be believed that she paid it. Otherwise,
well, no. Let's say he has no vested interest. Like, for example, whether she's a Bu'ula or a Basula is totally irrelevant to him, right? He's allowed to marry her. He's a Yisrael. He's not a Kohen. So there's no vested interest here. I just want to know: can he be made on a Maisa Shahaya that took place before he married her? Or do we say, no, now when he's standing in front of Beis Din in the Maisa Agada, Kevin Shehigin, he's already married to her, so we're going to apply the principle of Ishto Kigufo. He's being made on himself. I don't know how far you're going to go with Ishto Kigufo. I would say Ishto Kigufo means that if there's some issue about his wife, subsequent that was this orer, it came into existence subsequent to his marriage, Ishto Kigufo. But if you're talking about a Maisa Shahaya before and he has no negias, I'm not sure if Ishto Kigufo should apply. But what bothers me here is that the whole shtickel Torah, the Noda Yehuda, is to differentiate between Ishto Kigufo and Sheminos and Enobba. Whereas in the first case there's no edus at all, in the second case it's just a chashash sheker, but relative to other people, the edus could be acceptable and it's valid. That's the shtickel Torah of the Noda Yehuda. Now he gets back to the Beit Shmuel. Why does he have to go through this whole acrobatics in order to be mechadish chidushim and then criticize the Beit Shmuel. He should have criticized the Beit Shmuel by saying, Ishto Kegufo. I mean, that's a basic principle. And if Ishto Kegufo, there's no edus here on this Shmuya that would allow her to marry a Kohen. I don't know. There's something, you know, there's a piece of the puzzle that's missing here. Ubiikar Sveko Shalnod Vihuda Hadin Mefurish Betosefta Biyavamis Apodis Ashvuya Muta Lisosa Hamed Al Ashvuya Rezlo Yiklipsim Kodas Lo Yotzi. Interesting. So even though the Nod Vihuda rejects his Raya from the Mishnah of Zechariah ben Akatsa, but nevertheless there's an explicit Raya from Etosefta in Yavamis. And I'm not sure who he's quoting. The little Osches over here, correct? Diria Tosefta, Huvu Hu, ba ba ba. Oh, maybe the Nod Vihuda himself is quoting the Tosefta, it's not clear to me. Now we have another little piece here. Hagioresh and his Gaira Veros Adam. Rashi Pirish the Mairi Sharas Adam Bo Bayom. So on the very day of Hagerish he saw Adam, Mishum Hachi Savar of Yehuda, the Daya Shaita. Why? Because as a Goyita, she cannot be Mitami Mitumas neither. The Kaiva di Efshal Tamoso saw me Aslias, the Esmol Goyahoi, so the A Mitamino is therefore A Mitamino saw Mipkida Lipkida.
No, so in other words, there's a prior event.
Right, so there's a package deal over here that the entire enterprise of Tumala Mafreya is based on what we call me ace li ace. Me pkida li pkida is also part of me ace li ace. It cuts down me ace li ace. But if you cannot apply me ace li ace, then you don't even apply me pkida li pkida. So for example, let's say she made a bedika at 7 a.m. Then she jumps into the mikvah of Gerus at 8 a.m. And then at 9 p.m. on that same day, she sees Dam. So you might say that since there was a... No, I'm sorry. Let's start again. She undergoes Gerus at 7 a.m. She makes a bedika at 8 a.m. and she finds herself Tahora. And then she sees Dam. So you might say she should be Mitame Lamafreya from the time of the Pekida. But we're going to say no, that since she can't go basically ace, because she saw Dam on that same day, then there's no din of me Pekida Lepekida as well. Basically, we're doing away with Lamafreya. And that's called Dayashait. Avalashiti Yashanakos of the Mairish and his Gaira Esmol. Vafilu Hachi Eino Mitama me basically ace. The Tumas Meisleis Kashosh to Abonim Lo Gozros O Gzera Al Gioris Elam Yishosh Eschilo Liros V'Elech. It sounds to me that the Shita Yishona is saying something like Milse Lo Shchicha Lo Gozru Beir Abonim. In other words, with regard to a Gerus, since Gerus is such a unique, exceptional, rare case, therefore we're not going to apply the normal standards of the Rabbanon, of Chashashas the Rabbanon, and institute this Gzera of Tumala Mafreya. So even though there is Me'es Le'es here, right, because the Geirus took place on Sunday and she saw Dam on Monday, but since the entire Tumala Mafreya would be only a Chashash the Rabbanon, Lo Gozru Gzera B'Gioris. V'direi Rashi tzrifim ilom ha'hutz l'tam di'ein metam nasolim ha'freya mishum dikev in the lekel ha'migzah me'es leis lo gazrim p'kidu kida. It's a package deal. Harei yesh l'tayar kam mishum sfek sfeika shema bo ha'dam ka'eis v'im tetzlom asher bo ha'konam l'chein shema yotz ha'dam kishahoy sagoya v'kosle beis ha'rechem hemiduha ad ata. Let's understand this Sfek Sfeika. First of all, maybe the Dam went straight from the Makar out of her body, and therefore there's no Lamafreya. And even if you'll assume that the dam was held up in her body, maybe the moment that it left her makar, she was a goyita. It was held up. Is lachen shema yotz adam k'shahoisa goya. The kosli beisarechem hemiduo ad ata. So I think when he says yotz adam, it means yotz min a makar. K'shahoisa goya. You have to really know Masech, you know, Hilchas Nida. He's saying that if the dam left her mocker and she was a goya, that dam is never, ever, ever metame betumas nida,
right,
even after her gerus. It's halach in the cheftz shel dam.
Right. Yeah.
I would said it's halach in the tuma, that the tuma cannot emerge because she's a goya. Now she's a Jewish woman, the dam comes out of her body, she's metamei tumas nida. I mean, it's dam in a mokar. Nay, dam in a mokar has to be dam that's tamei when it leaves the mokar. And if it's not metamei, then it's a din in the dam that this dam doesn't have the koach to be metamei.
Even though it will come out, but it didn't come out from the mokar, it came out from the kodle b'terechim.
Right, so since it came out to the mokar and she was a goya, such dam is mufka, completely excluded from being metame. If it can't be metame at the moment of yitzias adam and a mokar, then that dam is mufka from being metame. There's no new yitzio when it leaves her body to be metame. It's a din in the cheftz shel dam, not the maisa yitzio or the shasa yitzio. Hare anusa umefuta dimemela. Right, so what happens here is that we understand in cases where she prepares herself and she takes precautions. But let's see that. I think it would be better off if we see it inside. So we're still here on Daf Lamed Zion, right? Just one second. No, Adaf Lamed Vavam and Beis. So what happens over here? Just one second. Where's Rav Yossi Aglili? Give me a minute and we'll have it. Yeah, Bishlam and Gioris is came to die to lose Nafshe. What are we going to do with Yosef Bishem V'ayin? Oh, Bechi Teimo called him a Mele Lo Omer Rabbi Yossi. Is what about Anusa? Is Mele? And yet, Afal Pichain Tanya Anusa is according to Rav Yossi, Matiliores, Linase Levad. Okay, so we have it here. Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph. Should I review that one more time, just to make sure that we're all on the same page? Just Isovenik, I mean, I'm not going to go through the Gemara inside. Yes, no, maybe?
Yeah.
Okay, so let me just go over it very quickly. Rav Yossi says that a woman will take precautions not to get pregnant, and therefore she can get married immediately. We don't have to assume that maybe she was pregnant. So the Gemara says, well, that makes sense in the case of a shivcha who anticipated that her master would deliver her and get shichur. So she wouldn't have in any relationship which would undermine her ability to get married immediately after he gives her a get shichur to a Jewish man. But the Gemara says in the case of Shem V'ayin, she had no way of anticipating that he's going to knock out her tooth and therefore she's going to go free. So the Gemara suggests that maybe in that case Rabbi Yossi would agree that she needs what we call Amtana. She has to wait 3 months. Kidei la'avchin bein Zerah Kodesh and Zerah Apostle. The Gemara says you can't say that because Rabbi Yossi Aglili actually goes on record as saying that in the case of an anusah of mefuta should get married immediately, without having to wait the amtan of gimel chadashim. Well, would you say that she anticipated having a rape situation? Obviously not. So hikshar rosh, my part me anusah mefuta lema de hacham mairi bibesula shenensa venispatita. The time of the Rabbi Yossi, Lefisha Eini Shemesaberes, Mibi Rishona. Ah, maybe there's a technical reason why Rabbi Yossi waives the requirement of Hamtana and assumes that she cannot be pregnant because she's a Basula, and a woman doesn't become pregnant from the first relationship. A Basula does not become pregnant from the first relationship. Now, Rabbi Yehuda says that in the case of Onus and Mefata, she needs to wait 3 months before she gets married. Aye, she's a Basula. So the answer is, Rabbi Yehuda has a Gzera, the Rabbanan of Gazrina and Bia Rishona to be a Shnia. If we allow her to get married immediately after the Bia, which is the case of Bia Rishona, then somebody might mistakenly think that, as a general rule, a woman who's been living with a man and now she wants to get married, she doesn't have to wait Gimel Chadosh. They wouldn't discern the difference that this is a unique case because of her status as a Basul. The Od Kasha, so that's the Russian's Kasha. And furthermore, Amaya Amrina Chashinon Shemalonis Hafcha Yofi Yofi. The Gemara explains Rabbi Yehuda requiring Hamtana because the method of contraception is not a reliable method. It is afilu imis apeches, even if you'd say she can get all the zera out of her body, tzricha lahamtin gzera misapeches asu eino misapeches yechi de gozer ketana atu gedola. So the Rosh is asking a second question here, that if the Gemara is postulating that Chayshin and Shemalon is Hapcha Yofa Yofa, why not just circumvent that? You can just drop that and in its place just saying that we're going to have a Gzera of Misapepas also ain't a Misapepas, meaning people don't know that the reason why she can get married immediately is because she was Misapepas. They'll assume that in general, even if she wasn't Misapepas, she's allowed to get married. But Tirates Dila Pirish Ri Bitosis Diramaskal Tsricha Nicha. Where's Tosis Diramaskal Tsricha? Maybe it should be Tsrichos? What does it say?
Tsrichos Nicha.
No, it says Tsrichos?
Yeah, mine says Tsrichos.
Okay, good. Tsrichos.
Where's the Tosis?
That's this Tosis here on Daflam and Zainam and Aleph. It's about the fourth Tosis down on the page.
Oh.
The logaris v'plug to the Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Yeseros al Benoski Milshanim v'lutayu v'gedola. The logazar Rabbi Yehuda ketano atu gedola ken al korchach mayri hocha beisha beula shenensa v'nispatita. V'vesula lo avigazar Rabbi Yehuda. All right, so for this we'd have to go through the Tosa Dimaskal Tzricha. What's the last page that we photocopied? Is Taflam and Zion? Taflam and Vav is the last page.
Yeah, that's the last page.
So let's just see, we have 2 minutes till Mincha, if we can get our scholar here, the next sugya, from Ehocha Nafka, Mehasam Nafka. So let's see if we can find this on Daf Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph.
Yeah, you were, two dots.
The two dots at the bottom?
Two lines at the bottom, up from the bottom.
Oh. So why does the Mishnah quote Lo Yason as the source for Kimlid Ramini? What about Kedei Rishoso? Tzarki in my paracha, Yesh Lomid the Masnisa Kaimala, Kamashmon the Af Bishogeg Potur. And that's why we quote the Apostle Yason Besvara, Delo Yason, Hainu Ason, Mamish. Al Mikdei Rishos, Alinu Chon Lumod El Mezit. So Rabbi Kivega is asking a kasha here. The Gemara answers that we need two psukim, chad lemisa umama, chad lemalchus umama. Li'el, lamehayom and aleph, hikshu atosfis, delareish lachish, disle, the chayvi malki yishogim, peturim yitashlumim, exer, shav, the rasha, rasha, amai, be'inon, trey, kroy, leilif, mihach, exer, shava, gufa, the chayvi malkus, mizidim, peturim yitashlumim, Yehi the Chayvei Mises Pturim. So if you have the Gzeres Shava, then why do you need Trey Kroy? We say we need one Kroy for Chayvei B'Misu Mamun. Is Leilif Mehach Gzeres Shava Gufa? Well, let's leave this for tomorrow. So we're up to Li'el Daf Lamed Hey. When I say tomorrow, I mean the next year. Lamed Hey of an Aleph. So let me take this opportunity to wish you all a great Shabbos, and thank you very much. We're making some progress here. I like this idea of looking at a few different smaller pieces.